our next presenter. I don't know how long we've been working together here. Seems like 100 years. Everybody knows Steve Lampen's been with Belden for 25 years in a lot of different positions. He covered a lot last night. That was very entertaining. In 2010, he was Educator of the Year from the National Systems Contractors Association. 2011, Educator of the Year by the SBE. He's written 3 books and thousands of articles. My favorite article that you wrote was for Radio World when we did our, remember the speaker test, cable test, the blind cable test? So, Steve, give us a presentation, and I know it'll be good.
Well, hopefully this is the last time you'll have Mr. Lampen here, I'll tell you that. Just after last night, you know, you probably had more than you expected. But today I get to actually talk about wire, you see. This is a pretty good thing. So I could justify my existence by this one. Now, what I'm talking about is video cable. And, you know, probably 2 or 3 times I've given a presentation here or at NAB or other shows. And I remember about 5 years ago I had a presentation called Is Coax Dead? Because everybody was saying, oh, we're going to 4K and that's the end of coax. And we weren't so sure. I mean, we really didn't know the answer, but we certainly do now. And the answer is pretty much status quo, is what I would say. That really the choices you have are the same choices you've always had. Now, I'll tell you one thing. Here are the 3 choices. Fiber optics, twisted pairs, which is to say data cable, Cat 5, Cat 6, Cat 8 is coming, and so on, and coax, the same 3 choices you've always had. However, I will warn you that these are not the only 3 choices you will eventually have. And in fact, if I had more time, and maybe at the end of this, if I still have time, they've given me an hour and a half here, I think. And if I don't waste that entire hour and a half with funny stories, that I might talk to you about things that might be coming down the pike in terms of new technology. And I will tell you this, that we have people within Belden whose entire job is to work on new technology, and it's amazing to me how nobody in Belden knows these people exist. Well, I think this is by design. And I can tell when we're getting close to something new because these people will no longer talk to me. And that's a dead giveaway that something is happening. So at the end, if I have time, I might talk about things. So just because I'm showing you 3 technologies here doesn't mean that's it. End of story, no more technology. Oh, absolutely not. There's all sorts of things coming. So for instance, and I'm going to talk about each one of these in more detail, starting with, of course, fiber optics. Now, you know, there was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, that you were scared of fiber. Well, I'll tell you, that's the one thing. I was talking to somebody in the exhibits hall just today about the fact that nobody is scared of fiber anymore. In fact, it's not a question of do you know what it is? Of course you do. Do you know how to use it? You probably do. Do you know how to put connectors on it? A lot of you do. And in fact, that's getting simpler and simpler and cheaper. And so the whole point is that fiber optics is becoming pretty much a norm. And there are some places that fiber absolutely makes sense if you're talking about great distances, if you're talking about huge bandwidth, if you're talking about absolute protection from RFI and EMI. I mean, there are things like that, that fiber just is the default answer for these things. It's not to say it's the cheapest answer, it's just the default answer. Now, the interesting thing about the cheap part, the fiber itself is not expensive and has never been expensive and is getting cheaper and cheaper all the time. In fact, a single mode fiber, a single one, is pretty much the same as buying a piece of coax in terms of cost. It's the conversion in and out that's the problem. And here's, for instance, I'll give you one of these technologies that is coming, has been coming for a long time, and I keep hearing rumors on the grapevine that something is happening, And that is that this conversion from photons to electrons, or electrons to photons, are what keep fiber from really taking over the world. Like back in 1973, when the whole thing began, they said, oh, next year is the year of fiber. Well, they've been saying that every year since then, and it's still not here because of this conversion problem. And what you need is an IC, a circuit that works photonically, that takes in photons and uses photons, not that just converts them to electrons. That's the expensive part. So a photonic chip, if you hear about a photonic chip, call your stockbroker. That's what I'm talking about. And that will change a lot of things in terms of what you can and can't do and how cheap fiber is to install and stuff like that. But until then, you have the same single mode, multi-mode. We have new fibers that are a little more bend resistant. We have tactical fiber that you can run over and it still works okay. All sorts of things like that. Well, those have been around for quite a while. So it's just maybe you didn't know about them or you didn't have a need for them. And eventually, fiber is going to have some other things coming down the pike that will give it a run for the money, which aren't here yet either, and hopefully we'll get to those at the very end. Okay, and then we have IP, essentially the data world. Now, this could be fiber or copper. They don't really care the medium here, but they talk about, Internet Protocol, IP, and they're usually talking about Ethernet to go with that, which could be either copper or fiber. And the whole point is, our friends at Grass Valley, we own Grass Valley, in case you didn't know that. We've owned them for a while now, and we're best buddies now. And we're looking for other people to buy, as you might imagine. And that's what happens when you get to be a $3 billion company like we are now, is you start to buy things like interesting things. So, if you know somebody we should buy, by all means, let me know. We have an acquisition department. I'd be glad to pass on any names that you mention to me, just to see. We'll do due diligence and look at these things and see if we should buy something else. So, and I know that's a sad thing to say, because we used to be just a little fuddy-duddy old wire and cable company, and now somebody says in the elevator, hey, what do you do for a living? Looking at my shirt that says Belden, I have a hard time thinking what I should say anymore. I used to say wire and cable, Oh, that was easy. Not anymore. I still say wire and cable. That's now a lie, you see, so. Okay, but the whole point is, Grass Valley and lots of other people are pushing IP, and we talked about this today as well. And the interesting thing is, IP has a lot of advantages. The idea of having a network running signals around the place, well, it could be data signals, it could be video signals, it could be audio signals. Well, isn't it interesting, because the data, the audio and the video are data. So it's still a data signal, and the whole point is, it makes a lot of sense because ads, moves, and changes in this world are really, really easy to do, and you have great versatility. I mean, if you had a networked architecture and somebody says, I need to move master control to the other side of the building, that's you push some buttons and maybe change a patch cord or two, and suddenly you say, it's there. Your control room is now on the other side of the building. Where before, it used to take you 6 months and 1 million feet of cable. We love that. And you'd pray when you'd change the switch to make sure everything's working. You have to buy two of everything because you have old and new, kind of thing. That's going to go away. Except the interesting thing is, this kind of architecture, IP, well, first of all, it scares the bejesus out of a lot of you because it's something you're not familiar with. And so it's really new kind of architecture. And there was, if I can be blunt, a petition, I kid you not, that was sent to Grass Valley, signed by a lot of network people and a lot of integrators and some big names in the industry, saying, please do not kill coax. Well, that sounds something like it should be coming to me, but no, we already believe in coax. Grass Valley, who's pushing IP, well, maybe they need to give you that extra spigot on the box so you could use coax. And they came back with a very interesting statement, which I would run with, which is if your facility has more than 16 cameras, IP makes a ton of sense. If you have less than 16 cameras, then maybe you might consider a hybrid of some kind. In which case, now you have the same three cables you've always had to choose from, including coax, which of course is the main part of what I'm going to show you today, is what we've been working on in coax. And the whole point is, if you're going to go to this data side, to the networking side, what they do, the top of the line data cable right now is 10 gig cable called Cat 6A, augmented category 6. And that will do 10 gigabits of throughput, 10 gigabits of data. Well, that's not 12 gigabits or 12 gigahertz of bandwidth. And so, therefore, what they're going to do is they use very mild compression called TECO compression, which is a 4-to-1 compression. And what that does is it takes the 12 gigahertz and puts it onto 3 gigahertz. Well, 3 gig is where you were yesterday. Some of you are there right now. And so you can put three of these on a 10 gig cable and have 1 gig left over for metadata or audio or machine control or whatever you want. And so the interesting thing is, this is one way that the architecture can actually make sense. Now, it's compression. Some say this is a bad word, but this is very gentle compression. I can't say this is compression with, you know, perfection either, but it's interesting. I've seen the images. Well, I'm not really that, you know, perfect a video guy. They look great to me. But I'm old, so who knows? Okay, so there's this as a possibility. And here's a little bit about the cable that you would use for that. It's either fiber or it's copper. If it's copper, it's called Category 6A, augmented Category 6, 10G base T. It's 100 ohms, it's 100 meters, like it's always been. The interesting thing is the next step after this is Category 8, which has already been approved in committee and should be here already. I'm not sure why it's not. I think they're arguing about microscopic details at the moment. The interesting thing about Category 8, though, is that they say 30 meters, 100 feet. Suddenly, because we're going so much higher in frequency, and there are two kinds of Category 8, 25 gigahertz, 25 gigabits, I should say, and 40 gigabits. And both of these are going to be available. They're both going to be 100 feet, 30 meters. And they say that covers 90% of the installations in the data world. And I say, well, what about the broadcast world? And they look at me with a rather strange expression because they're unaware that you guys even do data, you know. And especially you look at, you know, that enterprise side that does all the computer stuff. You are tiny by comparison. You are 1/100th the size of that industry. So you are a drop in the bucket. And that's why I'm sorry to say you are in the position of being an afterthought to the data people. Oh yeah, and we got broadcast as well. And the thing is, we have a bunch of new things I could talk about, which I'll talk about one here, just coming up in the data world. But the interesting thing is, even the data people for Belden, we happen to be the world's largest producer of audio and video cable, and the data people never think about this. And so, for instance, we have some new RJ45 connectors. And I got very excited when I saw these. And I could talk to you about these at some other time. I don't have time here. And the whole point is that in the presentation they put out, it said that these male plugs, these male plugs and jacks, you know, plugs and jacks, and the male plugs, they're only good for two things, which is access points or surveillance cameras. That's it. And I said, no, wait a minute. In the broadcast world, it's all plugs. You buy a patch panel, that's jacks. What do you need to put on your cable? Plugs, male plugs. And they're astonished that broadcasters would do such a thing. So it's about thinking, you know? And I'm sorry to say that because you're kind of quiet, maybe you're not getting the attention you deserve. But the point is, you're going to be pushed into this marketplace where you're going to have to use the same stuff they're already using. And you won't say, oh, I want a server that does this, this, this. No, no, you don't. You're going to use what's there. Good luck. Make it work. Because you can't afford to buy something that's custom made for you. Are you kidding? This industry is 100 times bigger, so the stuff they have is so much cheaper, you simply can't say no. Good luck. Okay. And here's one of the things, just to show you that even in this world of Category 6 and 6A and 10 gig and stuff like that, that there's always room for improvement. There's nothing that can't be made better. Nothing. And here's a good example of that. On the right, you see it's pretty much a standard Category 6 cable, or 6A cable, I should say, a 10 gig cable. And the one thing that people complain about these more than anything else is how big they are. They're very big. Well, they're big for a very good reason, and that is because the main reason they fail is not crosstalk between the pairs inside the cables, but the crosstalk between the cables themselves, something called alien crosstalk. And so you make the cables big, and what it does is push them away from each other so they can't talk to each other. That's a simple solution to this problem, and that's why the cable on the right is so big. On the left, however, you notice those cables are considerably smaller. In fact, they work better than the ones on the right. And the reason why, if you look very closely, and, oh, I do have a laser pointer. I'm not sure if I could even point at this stuff from over here, this angle. If you look on the outside of each of these, inside, under the jacket, you will see it looks like they have kind of a foil in there, and you'll say, oh, these are shielded cables, right? There must be a shield inside. No, it's not. It's a new kind of thing. It doesn't have a drain wire attached. In fact, if you pull this out, which when you do one of these cables, you put a connector on, you'll see this stuff. It's metal, but it's got plastic on both sides. There's no way you can make contact with this. And what this is an absorptive layer, a completely new technology. And it's that metal layer in there is extraordinarily thin, much thinner than a foil shield would be. And so the whole point is you connect unshielded connectors at both ends of this cable. And if there's a signal that's trying to radiate out of the cable, or come from the cable next to it into the cable, this layer will absorb the signal and attenuate it based on the length of the cable. It's a very new technology. And boy, the interesting thing is we invented this, about 15 years ago, and we didn't tell you. And in the patch cords that we make ourselves with our own connectors, which we'll sell to you and have sold to you for decades now, we had this absorptive layer in there just to see how well they do, and it's so good that we have now introduced it as a standard product that you yourself can put a connector on. The interesting thing is, so it's unshielded because there's no drain wire, no shield connection, no ground at each end. So all these ground loop problems that you could have, and you probably know ground loop problems from your audio days, well, they exist in the data world as well, gone. Because there's no ground here. That's not a shield. It's an absorptive layer. And the other thing this will do, which is quite amazing, is not just at various frequencies will this work, but it will also work with heat. And you'll go, what in the hell is he talking about? This is a data cable. Well, see, the one thing that data cables, people want to do with data cables is to run power down them, something called power over Ethernet, P-O-E. And the standard is currently 35 watts. It's going to be 60 watts. There's PoE++, which is coming up, which is going to be 100 watts. This cable, each of the cables in that bundle on the left, will do 105 watts. Now, you think about this for a second. 105 watts times 48 cables there, that's 4,800 watts, 4.8 kilowatts of DC power running down this cable. So you can imagine with the resistance of those wires, those are 23 gauge wires, they don't have zero resistance. These are not superconductors. So you're going to have heat. Where does that heat go? Well, it gets absorbed by that absorptive layer, where if you did this on the right-hand cable, that cable would be quite clearly very warm to the touch if you're doing 4,800 watts down it. But why in the world would somebody want to do this? Oh, there are some people out there who would die to do this. For instance, let's imagine you have an airport. You're the IT guy at the airport, and here you have 1,000 screens showing all the flight information. And what do you have to do now? Well, you have a data cable coming in, you have a converter that turns that data into video to run the screen, and then you have a power cord, and you have to have AC power coming in, and conduits, and who knows what, everywhere. Now, what you do is you put in the screen. You plug in the cable to the monitor, and you're done. It powers it up. It feeds its data. The data can go in both directions if you need, for some reason, the data to go in both directions. This is Ethernet. It is bidirectional automatically. Boy, would they love that. That would save millions of dollars in an airport. Imagine what it might do for you. What that means is a lot of things that you have in your facility, which stand alone for some reason, but get plugged in because they need the data connection, now have a power connection. And believe me, there are people like the lighting industry who are looking at this and beginning to go crazy with the idea of what they can do to control stuff with power based clearly on the data and power which is going out of the data cable itself and nothing else. So, you know, you have this to fight against, so to speak. But meanwhile, let's talk about coax cable. Now, here's a quick list of coax cables, you know, SDSDI, HDSDI, 3G SDI, and then we get to today, 4K. And there are two kinds of 4K. There are the standards, they're SMPTE standards, now ratified, long since ratified. One is for 6 gigahertz, which is essentially 24 frame or 30 frame 4K. And then you have 60 frame 4K, which is the second one, which is 12 gigahertz. 12 gigahertz on a coax? I remember, see, I'm a radio guy. I remember when 950 megahertz was microwave. Okay? And now we're talking 12 gigahertz down a piece of coax. What is this, you know? It's amazing. But we're not done with this yet either. And down below that is a kind of a short list of the cables Belden makes in various sizes, from teeny tiny, that first one's a tenth of an inch, down to RG11 at the bottom, the garden hose of digital video, you know, and every one in between, and they're different sizes. And of course, the bigger ones go farther and the smaller ones are easier to put in, and you get the idea. And this is a world of BNCs, but then we have mini BNCs, which there's no standard. We have DIN connectors, which we're kind of responsible for because we own Envision that started the push toward DIN connectors. That is, in fact, a standard, so at least other people can make them. We don't even make DINs ourselves yet. But the whole point is a range of sizes. Now, this doesn't mean I couldn't make a cable smaller than what you see. It also doesn't mean I couldn't make a cable bigger than what you see. And this is something interesting, especially when I get to 4K, and somebody says, I really need to go a long way, because I'm doing 4K, you know, in a football field. I could make a cable much bigger than an RG11, and boy, would it go a long way, and you would hate installing this stuff. Maybe you'll just trench it and put it underground in the football field and be done with it, you know, but it would certainly work. So the question is, where do I go from here? Well, where do I go from here? What we had to do was to test everything that we have. And we tested every cable. I'll show you, I think, 3 or 4 cables here that we tested. Now, these cables only show the tests up to 6 gigahertz. And I have to tell you right now, we tested way beyond 6 gigahertz. We tested to 12 gigahertz, which by sheer luck was the limit of the test gear that we have, is 12 gigahertz, and has been for a very long time, and we just never bothered to tell you. And we tested out to 4.5 gigahertz, was the last place we stopped. And it's written on our cables. It's tested to 4.5 gigahertz, which is the third harmonic of the Nyquist limit of 3 gig video. No big deal, at least not anymore. It was a big deal back then, not a big deal now. And so this is what this is doing, is looking at the impedance variations on the cable is what we look at, because that really tells us that is probably more important to us than things like attenuation, although I'll show you some attenuation numbers coming up, which are very interesting. And by the way, I mean, in this particular cable, 179DT, it says in the upper right-hand corner there, this is the smallest one we make, 1/10 of an inch. So you think, oh, this is probably the worst cable because it's so tiny, making this precise is very hard. And yet, and by the way, I talked to Carl, the guy who did all these graphs, and he had hundreds of graphs of this cable. He said, what do you want? I said, give me the worst test that you have. This is the worst cable that he could find of all the graphs for this particular cable size. And you'll see there's one little spike that goes up to 20 dB of return loss, just around 4 gigahertz. And it's a little better than 20 all the way out to 6 gigahertz. Beyond 6 gigahertz, between 6 and 12, I'll tell you, there are some spikes out there, which I can't show you. They won't let me show you. But that's okay. They're there, believe me. And, that's one cable. Let me show you the next cable, 1855A. That's a cable you probably know. Again, this is the worst piece he could find, the worst test piece. And you see, there's a pretty good spike, about 4.5 gigahertz. You know, I went too far. Here's 1855. That also has a spike around 4, 4.5. There's another spike down at 3, just about around 3, you know, which is 20 or 30. Now, the question is, what do these numbers mean? Well, let me show you one more cable, and then we'll talk about what these numbers are actually telling you. You could go back. And by the way, if you want a copy of this presentation, I'd be glad to give it to you. I'm pretty sure it's going to be loaded on their website. He says, yes, it is, because they already have this. So you could be able to get these slides and send me an email or something. Oh. I should put my card out. Ask me for a card. I have some here. 1855. And 1694, there's a big spike at 4.5 gigahertz. The funny thing is, we used to stop at 4.5 gigahertz, just about that point, just before that spike. Now, this is one piece. Other pieces don't look like this. This is the worst one he could find, of course. I'm showing you the worst. And yet, it's pretty good. And the question is, now, what do these numbers mean, 10, 20, 30, 40? Oh, I need to talk about this first. Okay, I'm going to improve these cables. I can make better cables. And the first thing I thought about was improving their velocity, the speed of the signal going down the cable. Now, the speed of the signal is directly related to the quality of the plastic between the center conductor and the shield, something called the dielectric. And if you tell me the dielectric constant, that's telling me the quality of the plastic. So the whole point is, I can take plastics and I can add air to them. And the more air I add, the better they get. And back in the old days, 25 or 30 years ago, 78% was pretty much as good as we could do. Then we started to do something called gas injection, where we actually put bubbles of nitrogen into the plastic. And I got to 80 and 82 and 83% and 84%. Now, we're doing cables that are 86%. These are 50-ohm cables we're making with 86% velocity. You'll notice 86% velocity means two-thirds of the cable, two-thirds of that plastic is air, is nitrogen. One-third is plastic. We sell you air. And the more air we put in it, the more we charge you. This is a great business, I'll tell you. But see, you guys sell time. You don't own that either, right? So, there you go. But here's the problem. The really good cables we make these days are around 83% velocity, which is, you know, almost 60% air. And if I'm going to change that to a higher velocity, 86, 87, 90%, we don't even know how high we could go. The problem is, this would change the dimensions of the cable. And when I do that, that's fine. In fact, I have two choices of a way to go. I could keep the same size of the cable and make the center conductor larger, which of course would be lower resistance and better performance. Or I could keep the same center conductor and make the cable smaller, which you would also like. This is win-win, you know? Either way I go is fine, except either way, I'm talking about starting from scratch to build connectors. And one of the things we did right at the beginning was look at the connectors we had, and they look pretty decent out to 12 gigahertz. In fact, we have tested everybody in the world that we can find that says they have a 12 gigahertz connector. Our connectors are right in there with them, and yet we haven't done anything. We haven't redesigned them at all. Now, could we make better connectors? Sure we could. And I have a feeling, my sense is, that the next step after this is 8K. Oh, I'm going to pull out every stop to see what I can do on a piece of coax, a piece of copper coax running, you know, 24 gig. I mean, I'm not even sure what I'm talking about here, and nobody can tell me. You know, are we talking, you know, high frame rates and deep color, and then suddenly I'm at 100 gig? And I think 100 gig is probably higher than a coax will go for any reasonably usable distance. You know, 3 feet maybe. But 24 gig might be doable, in which case I want to have higher velocity. I want to have 86 or 7 or 90% velocity, mostly air and a tiny amount of plastic. And believe me, I talked to the factory guys about this, and they say, we've never done this before. And I say, yes, exactly. That's what we want, what nobody's ever done before. They just want to do the same thing they did yesterday. You know, this is okay. Make the same thing. No, I want something new. I want something better. I'm not very popular. So here's our first cable. And what we have done, this is based on a previous cable. Let me go back a couple of slides here and talk for a second here, where I had the list of cables. Come on. If you look at our list of cables, 179, 1855, 1505, 1694, all of which you probably know or might use. There's a next one after that, 1794. That was invented because 1694 would not go 100 meters at 3 gig. It got close, but not 100. So we brought out a cable, 1794, that would go 100 meters at 3 gig. How much did we sell? Precious little. Because people just love 1694, and they put up with the fact that it wouldn't quite do 100 meters. It'll do 80 or something, and that's just fine. In fact, I'll show you the actual distances in just a second. And so this is the cable. We looked at that cable. We looked at 1694 going, you know, 6 gig and 12 gig, and said, we'll do 100 meters, because that's the magic number. Why in the world are people talking about 100 meters on a video cable? That's a Cat 5, Cat 6 distance, 100 meters. And then it occurred to me, well, guess what? TV stations are 50% data cable. They're made to this 100 meter spec, because that's all the data stuff that you already have. And if you're going for video over IP, guess what? It's going to be 90% data cable. The whole place is going to be 100 meters from place to place. And you'll conform everything so it doesn't go farther than 100 meters. And if you have to, then you're into fiber, which is really expensive. And therefore, you're going to try and stay to 100 meters. So guess what? The video cable has to follow suit. The video is now following the data. That's okay. All right. I understand. And so the point is, 1694 wouldn't go 100 meters at 4K, for sure, even if we souped it up and made it super fancy, which eventually we will. And so we brought out the next cable up in size, which is called 1794A, but this is the 4K version of that. So it starts now with the number 4. If you see a cable that starts with the number 4, it means this is a 4K cable. There's only one cable currently that starts with the number 4, 4794R, meaning riser rated. And that means you can go between walls or up a wall without using a conduit. That's what riser means. That's the same specification that 1694 had before, and all those cables that we've made before are all riser rated. There will eventually be a plenum version of this, but currently, no, just this. And right here in the picture, there are all sorts of things here that look normal to you, but are not. In fact, I would say the only thing of this cable that is the same as its predecessor is the jacket. That layer on the outside is pretty much the same as it's always been. Of course, what's printed on it is new, but other than that, same jacket. But underneath, well, let me give you the litany of what's inside now. Because first of all, if you strip off, so you see a cable like this, you can't tell on this picture because it's kind of a black and white picture. That center conductor sure does not look copper. And that's because it's silver-coated copper, silver-plated copper. It's a copper wire with a silver layer. And there's a very good reason why. And that is something called skin effect, that as the frequencies get higher and higher, less and less of the conductor is working. And by the time you're up at 12 gigahertz, I'll show you in some numbers in just a second how much skin effect is. And the whole point is there's so little of the conductor actually working that you might as well put a silver layer there, which is the lowest resistance of any metal, and therefore the best conductivity, and therefore you get the most output. And the thing, you would think, this really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. In fact, I'll show you one slide that looks like it means nothing at all, and then I'll show you the attenuation of this cable versus its predecessor, the all-copper version, and you will understand. Then over that is the same velocity foam, 83% foam, although we are now using a new kind of polyethylene. This is polyethylene plastic in here. And this is one of those places that I'll tell you, if there are certain engineers and directors of engineering, if they were sitting here, they would begin to perspire as I talk about this. Because this is one of our secrets, is this new kind of polyethylene. It has never been used in a video cable before. I don't know if that means it's been used in some other kind of cable before. They won't talk to me. But so the point is, very low loss polyethylene, which of course is 83% velocity. It's already mostly air to begin with. Then on top of that, we have a shield. In this case, you start with a foil shield. Then you have a braid layer, and then you have another foil. I don't know if you can see that here. Well, there's the foil shield, there's the braid, and there's another foil right there. Now, the interesting thing is, let's go from the outside in here, that foil shield is bonded, glued to the jacket. So when you strip the jacket off, that first layer goes right with it. You never even see it's there. And most of the time, you wouldn't even recognize the fact that there is that third layer. But because I have three layers of shield, foil, braid, foil, it's called a tri-shield, this has the highest shield effectiveness of any video cable we have ever made in the history of cable. And this says, well, if you ever are in an environment where you might have RFI or EMI, mostly RFI kinds of problems because we're talking high frequencies, this is the highest effectiveness we can give you, literally, in a coax. So that first foil goes magically. It's still there. The foil over the dielectric, over the center, over the core, that is also bonded, also glued to the core. Now, this is very interesting because there are two or three reasons we have done this. Reason number one is because we have connectors which are one-piece connectors. I don't know if you've seen these, where the pin is already in the connector, and you simply slide this on the cable. But if the cable foil in there is not bonded, you can bunch up the foil as you push it in if you don't go perfectly. With this bonded foil that we now have, you cannot miss, and it goes on perfectly every time. Well, thank you very much. Now, he's applauding. The funny thing is, when we first brought out 1505A in 1993, this is 23 years ago, We bonded the foil. And we got all these nasty calls, this is before emails, nasty calls and letters from the networks and installers saying, don't do this, don't glue that foil down, because if I don't strip it perfectly, I'll end up with a little slice of core and a little piece of metal on it, and the whole connector shorts out, and I'm screwed. So please do not bond the foil. So we have never bonded the foil since then until now. And because number one is that connector that we have, but there's another reason, and that is, of course, that once the foil is glued to the core, it can't move around. And it's the distance between that center conductor and that first foil that gives you the impedance of the cable. Now I have stability like we have never seen in terms of impedance alone, which is amazing. Now, the interesting thing is, of these three layers, the one we spent most of the time on was the braid. Because all the spikes you have seen in those previous pictures, they're all caused by braid. Those are braid spikes. Why? Because the braid is the last thing here that has something to do with dimensions, with physical dimensions, that's not symmetrical. I mean, braids are sets of four tiny little wires. We have bunches of sets of fours, and they weave in and out of each other. It's a braid, right? And there's an angle at which they cross each other called a braid angle, and there's spaces in between called interstices, where there's no braid, there is some braid, suddenly there's a little braid, there's more braid, there's less braid. All these things show up as a wavelength specified by the distance between the pieces I've just talked about. And that's why you suddenly get a spike, because throughout this braid, which is a repeating thing, you know, it repeats throughout the cable. If you have a flaw at a certain frequency, it repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats, and you get a spike that's bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So we have spent 6 months working on this, and what we ended up with is, first of all, sequestering the braiding machines, of which we have many thousands of these machines that do the best work on braids, and then working on them to be as precise as we possibly can. And that was, in fact, the hardest thing we did in this whole process, was work on these braiding machines. By the way, these braiders were originally intended to make shoelaces. You see, we make metal shoelaces, okay? And we put them around the insides of cables. And the people who make these still make the machines that make shoelaces, you understand. So be careful what you buy if you buy one of these. Okay, and here's just a quick list of what I just told you, you know, the things we have, the things we've done. And here is how far you can go. Now, this chart you have seen before. In fact, the first three columns are the same three columns you have seen for the last 15 or 20 years. And it simply shows you how far you can go in feet and meters for each of the cables we make. And this is a more extensive list than my previous list of cables. There's still some that are not on this list here, but that's fine. And the point is, there are three new columns at the end here. In fact, you'll notice, if you can read, there are two columns that say 3 gigahertz. And if you look at those two columns, one is about double the other column. Why is that? Because if you look at the very, very top of the column, it has a formula up there. This formula is part of the SMPTE standard. The formula used to be, and this is the safe distance formula, something invented by Merrill Weiss, if you know who this guy is, good friend of mine. And back in 1990 or something, he came up with this idea of a formula that would keep you safe, that would tell you how far you can go in a cable and keep you away from the digital cliff, you know, where things just collapse and fall apart and don't work. And his formula was minus 20 dB at half the clock by the time you're at HD. For SD, it's a different formula, 30 dB. And people complained to us that with this minus 20 at half the clock formula, they said, I can go way farther than you say I can go. Well, it's based on this formula. Well, you know, it's not us. Don't look at us. That's the formula. And they say, I can go at least double, sometimes triple this distance, and it seems to work just fine. So we went to SMPTE and said, we need to change this formula. And we petitioned them to make it minus 40 dB at half the clock. Now, this is interesting, because that means, and you see on those 2-3 gig columns, that doubled the distance you can go. The question is, minus 40, how much closer to the cliff is that? And I will show you that in a couple of slides. I'll actually show you where the cliff is, kind of, sort of. Because, you know, the cliff is one of those things that, you know, nobody actually knows where the cliff is. It's different for every cable and every box and every connector. So, but I'll show you something that kind of tells you where we're heading. Now, the last two columns are the new SMPTE standards for 6 gig and 12 gig. And you'll notice in the 6 gig column, the second to the last one, there are six cables listed in there. One of them is the new cable, 4794R. The other five are our existing cables. We have tested our existing cables, and five of them do just fine at 6 gigahertz. The stuff you already have, you want to do 6 gigahertz 4K? Use what you got. Just notice the distances here, because it's based on this new formula and at a higher frequency, 6 gigahertz. The interesting thing is that there are three new cables that just got added to this list. And if you would like to see these three new cables, I didn't add them on this list here. But you notice at the top of this, I don't have it here. There is if you go to our website and look for, put in digital distance chart on our website, and it will take you to a place you have to put in your name and email address and stuff, you know, but then we'll show you this same chart with all the new cables we're adding as well. And you'll notice by the time you get to 12 gig, the very last column, there's only one cable there, 4794R, which we've been talking about, and it goes 93 meters. Yes, we said 100. This is called honesty. It's what we're known for. 93 meters at 12 gig. That's pretty good. Now, I'm sure if I brought out cables that were bigger than it, like RG11 or something like that, I could go way past 100 meters, but it's a garden hose, you know, and not fun to use. And if I made smaller, they would be less than 100 meters, certainly. And I can tell you this right now. The next cable we're going to show is the 4K version of 1855, our little miniature one, very, very popular, second most popular cable. And it will be 4855R will be the part number. And we'll be releasing that probably next month is what I've been told, something like that. And I have a feeling we're going to probably release a new cable every quarter for the next year or two until we have the full throttle of cables here. We'll all have 4K versions available. Now, here's a slide you've never seen before, and no other cable manufacturer has ever shown you before, and it seems kind of inconsequential. It's about tolerances. How tightly do we make these cables in terms of tolerance? You see, on the left-hand column, I have millimeters, and then I have the tolerance on the millimeters, then inches and tolerance on inches, same thing. And there are two reasons I show this to you. One is so that if there are any competitors of mine in the audience, they will be depressed. Because these tolerances are better than any other cable manufacturer has ever done, but certainly better than we've ever done before. I mean, you look at the tolerance just in millimeters, 0.00508, plus or minus that number over 1.28 millimeters is the center conductor. Talk about precise. And the more precise it is, the better the impedance tolerance is, the better the performance is, the better the distance is. You get the idea. The other reason I'm showing this is for connector people. Because we have been bitten in the past where we would tell somebody, here's the size of the center conductor, but we didn't tell them the tolerance around that number. And the tolerance of the connector people is different than our tolerance. And so every so often you'd find a connector that wouldn't fit our cable. And why is that? Because we didn't show them the tolerance. Now there's the tolerance. Good luck with that, Mr. Connector Guy. Okay? Of which we are one, of course. Now, here's attenuation. And what this is showing you is two cables. The red cable is 4794R, our brand new cable. The blue cable underneath it is the cable it was based on, 1794A, its predecessor cable. That one's got a copper center conductor, no silver over copper. And in fact, that silver over copper is really the major thing you're looking at here. And you'll notice at low frequencies at the very start, it makes no difference whatsoever. Exactly the same performance. By the time you're at the end, those two curves are about 8 dB apart. 8 dB based on one thing, which is that little layer of silver over that copper wire. And the interesting thing is 8 dB brings us to like minus 67, something like that, dB down. 67 dB down. Now, you have to think about this. 67 dB down. Is that a recoverable video signal? Well, yes, it is. How far down can you go? And see, this is not a cable question. It's a chip question. You have to go ask Texas Instruments or Semtech Genom or, you know, somebody making chips. Can I do minus 70? Can I do minus 80? Because you see, if I could do minus 90, that would mean I could probably do 200 meters. Because no matter how deep the signal goes, it's recoverable. And this is very, very different. Because nobody's ever worked at video at these kinds of levels before. This also means that that minus 40 dB safe distance, you see, is backing up from this. And it's about two-thirds of the way to the cliff. And what that means is very simple. If I say this cable will go 100 meters, it means the cliff is probably 150 meters. Another third. You get the idea. And so you can actually tell where you're going to be. So here's 4794R in its current version. And you'll notice we have one very prominent spike at 9.5 gigahertz. The interesting thing is there are almost no other spikes of any significance before or after that. So clearly we're going to be working on that spike for the next year or two. Expect that to disappear. Now, I should mention something about these spikes. There are two ways you can get rid of a spike. One is you can simply change the braid so that you move the spike up in frequency. That's great, except, you see, our next cable is going to be 8K, you know? And guess what? All these spikes will show up again, and they're going to be much worse if we simply push them up there, much more prominent. So what we really have to do is get rid of the spike to make it go away. This is not trivial by any means. And the other thing I should point out here is above it are the red line is our guarantee that our cables will be no worse in return loss and impedance tolerance than these numbers. And above it is the SMPTE spec. And the thing that I have to point out, which just blows me away, is the very last blue line is 4 dB. If you read over on the side, 4 dB, that's 40% reflection. 60% of the signal gets through and 40% gets reflected. How anything can work with a 40% reflection? I mean, you guys have transmission lines. If you had 40% reflection, it's called blowing it up, you know? But here, you know, they're saying, oh, yeah, well, and you know why they're doing that? Because they want other cable manufacturers to pass. And you can see where we are. See, our cable's that green line down below. That's where we really are, at least on this particular cable. Every cable's different, of course. And our guarantee line, which is, I think it's 15 dB, which is 4% reflection, 3.84% reflection, a lot better. And then we make connectors. And as I said, our connectors, we make three-piece connectors, we make one-piece connectors. The one-piece now will just flip right on. They look really good. This is what we used for NAB to show these cables. And these could be improved as well. So we're going to be working on improving these as well to make better connectors. Certainly by the time we get to 8K, I don't know if a BNC is even an option there. Maybe we'll have to invent a new connector. Oh boy. Okay. So. And there are some things that we haven't even talked about, like colors, for instance. All the cables that we make currently come in 10 colors. Black, brown, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet, gray, white, and the poems that go with it, which are pretty much like the election now. And so, we will. The question is, should we make more than 10 colors? That's the resistor color code, you know? We could make more. In fact, Belden 9451, our audio cable, now comes in 16 colors because people wanted more colors. I could do 16 million colors, you know? So you tell me what you want. If you want more than 10 colors, I'd be glad to. And the next thing, other sizes, of course. And this is probably the order I would like to see things happen. 1855, 1694, 7731, with their numbers, the four numbers, you know, the four versions, the 4K versions of those. If you want something else, you know, you really love cable X, and you really would like to see a 4K version of that, please tell me, because it might influence me to move it up in the list, to put it higher in the list. It might get made first. Eventually, they'll all get made, but, you know, if there's something you have a big project or something and you really don't want to go 4K, let me know. And then other kinds of cables, outdoor, water-blocked, direct burial, plenum. We're already working on plenum, but, you know, there are all these variations that eventually will be available as well. And it's just a question of time. One of the things you'll notice if you go look at the chart online is that two of the three cables that have been added to the 6 gigahertz column are plenum cables, first time. And there's a problem with plenum cables, which is very simple. They contain Teflon. We don't make Teflon. DuPont makes Teflon. It is expensive. We are the world's largest user of Teflon. That doesn't make it any cheaper, unfortunately. But the whole point is, it's harder to foam Teflon than it is to foam polyethylene. And so making cables for 4K, they will not go as far. They already don't go as far, even in the 3 gig and HD world you live in. They definitely won't go as far by the time we get done with 12 gig. And the reason is very simple. DuPont, when they first brought out Teflon, there's a little book that they give you that tell you how to use it. And they have something called a void quantity, which is how much air you can add into Teflon. We passed that number 20 years ago. We're in no man's land in terms of adding air to Teflon. And, you know, we go to DuPont and they say, hey, don't look at us. You're doing stuff we thought was not possible. And so now I'm saying I want to go to 90% velocity, which is even more air, 70% air or something. And they're going, you guys are nuts. That's their solution, okay? But, hey, they'll sell us the Teflon, okay? And guess what? That's why these cables are four times more expensive than the regular cables. That money goes to DuPont. It doesn't come to us. Sorry. And look at that. I have a minute 22 left. So in this minute, yes. Maybe. Of course I want to go longer. Are you kidding? Okay, so let me tell you about three things nightly coming down the pike. Things like, higher amounts of air in plastic. That's a pretty obvious one. But there are three things. The next thing, which is moments away, it really is carbon nanotubes, which I've talked about before. Carbon nanotubes based on, well, they did research in the 60s into carbon. You know, you burn a piece of paper, what's left is carbon. And they noticed that some of the carbon formed little balls, which they called buckyballs. That was in honor of Buckminster Fuller, the king of the geodesic dome, because they're in that shape of a geodesic dome. It makes it one of the strongest materials known to man, stronger than steel. And the interesting thing is when you pick up a buckyball, which is microscopic, so it's kind of hard to do that to begin with, but when you pick one up, they self-align. And you start pulling out of this bunch of carbon a line of buckyballs that are all stuck together. And for want of a better term, I would call this one of the world's most strangest conductors, because the resistance of this on carbon is lower than any metal, which makes it perfect as a conductor if we can figure out how to make this into a cable. And a lot of this work is being done by Rice University. You can look this up online. Just Google Rice, Google buckyballs, Google carbon nanotubes, and you will see that they have a picture of the first coax cable made with carbon nanotubes. Now, I'm arguing with my engineers about whether this is an actual photograph or a really beautiful computer drawing of this cable. And we don't know. We can't figure it out. And this, of course, is where the people within Belden stopped talking to me. So I can only tell you so much, but maybe I'll come back next year with an interesting announcement, which is, guess what? Your 8K cable might be carbon nanotubes. That would be interesting because I can get you lower resistance and farther distance and greater precision and super strength, really strong, which is, especially for a small cable, is always a problem as well. So that's number one. But there's something even better than that coming. And it's been coming for a long time, and that is room temperature superconductors. Now, superconductors, they've known there were superconductors for a long time, hundreds of years. In fact, as soon as they realized that when you cool down a substance, that the vibration of the atoms and the electrons around it begin to vibrate less and less and less, it was very easy to chart this graph. Where do they stop vibrating at all? And this is something we call absolute zero. Minus 273 degrees C, 459 degrees F. They know exactly where this is and have for a long time. The problem is getting down to those temperatures is very, very, very difficult. It's really hard to get that cold. And so the whole point is to get materials that will do this thing, superconduct, which is to say no resistance at all at room temperature, at this temperature. And they have been trying to do this for 50 years. 50 years. A long time, and they still haven't managed. And the problem is really very simple. And that is that the longest one they have ever made is about that long. And the reason why is when you put a signal into a superconductor. See, if you put a signal into a regular copper wire, two things happen. First of all, it generates heat in the wire. There's resistance in the wire that generates heat. I mean, you can't feel it. You can if it's a power cord sometimes, you know. But in a video cable, you certainly can't. But there is resistance. There is heat generated. The other thing is it produces a magnetic field around that center conductor. That's how cables talk to each other. You know, they have magnetic fields going on here. With a superconductor, there is no resistance. And what that means is I can send a signal from here to Sri Lanka and back again, and what I put in comes out here, unchanged. There is no loss, no slope, no frequency response, no tilt. And that also means, therefore, infinite bandwidth. Bandwidth limited only by the box that is feeding the cable. You want 8 gigahertz, you want 100 gigahertz, no problem. And electrons, not photons. This is not fiber optic cable. It'll plug in just like the cable you have. The only problem is this. When you put the signal down this tiny little wire, and it's actually a kind of ceramic, it's not even really wire, that since there's no resistance, that signal turns 100% into a magnetic field. And the magnetic field, even with a tiny signal, is so intense that it pushes the atoms apart on the atomic level and the wire blows up. So if you could figure out how to stop that from happening, not only will we erect a gold statue in the parking lot to you, you'll be the world's first trillionaire, you will revolutionize telecommunications as we know it today. But that's not even the best. There is one more. Actually, there are dozens more, but I'll tell you one more, which is so amazing. It sounds like science fiction. It is not science fiction. They've known about this since the 1930s. Einstein knew about this. He called it spooky action at a distance. I kid you not, that's a direct quote of Albert Einstein. And this is something called quantum entanglement. And here's how it works. You take two particles. They could be electrons, they could be photons, they could be subatomic particles. It doesn't matter. Just two particles. You put them together. Then you separate them apart. And you do something to affect this one, the other one reacts. And they've known about this for a long time. And the interesting thing is, the farther you move them apart, it seems to make no difference at all. Once they have been together, you can take them any distance apart. Now, currently in the laboratory on Earth, the farthest we have gone between particles is 70 miles. So they know this effect actually works. The interesting thing is that the time it takes, once you turn this one and this one reacts, is instantaneous. Instantaneous, which you understand means faster than the speed of light. But you see, nothing's moving. I'm not breaking any laws here, because nothing's moving. It's just this causes this. That's all I'm saying. We just don't know how. And neither did Einstein. That's why he called it spooky action at a distance. But all the math, this is all based on quantum mechanics, all the math of this says this will work not just at 70 miles or 70 million miles or 70 billion miles, but the entire distance across the known universe. And so really what I want to have is a quantum entangled phone, okay? And I can go, hello, and here's a guy on another planet who's been studying English for a long time and says, hey, we've been waiting 10,000 years for you guys to figure this out so we can tell you the secrets of the universe, you know? What would you like to know? I can't wait, okay? I want a quantum entangled phone. And the point is, you talk about, I mean, here we are laughingly talking about running out of spectrum for wireless microphones. A quantum entangled microphone only talks to its brother particle. Only. And how many particles do you have? As many as you want. This would be cool. Just don't mix them up, you see. Because then they don't work. So, there are three things to make you think. If any of these, if you hear of any of these actually turning into actual products, like in the newspaper, what are you supposed to do? Stockbroker. You got it. That's how you get rich. I thank you very much. Oh. Questions? I see lots of hands.
So with the new implementations of the 4K cables, such as, like you said, the 4855 will be worked on.
Right.
Will that phase out?
No.
Okay. So then will the...
We're going to make both.
Okay. So it's going to be an addition, not a replacement.
We still make cables from, you know, 1932, so...
Okay. Well, okay. So then my question to that, on top of that then, is... Is the price difference going to be significantly more if we want to go to the 4K versus the...
About double.
About double. Okay. Thank you.
Question. You talked quite a bit about the jacketing and how it affects the velocity of propagation.
Yes.
Do the dyes that you use to color it affect that?
The dyes on the conductor?
On the jacket.
Oh, on the jacket. No. Oh. No, that's such a tiny percentage. No, the jacket doesn't actually affect anything. It's the core inside. If I put a die inside the jacket, that would affect the velocity. It's the over the center conductor. Think about magnetic fields. Where the magnetic field is in that core. And that's why what's in the core affects the speed of the signal. So if I put something in there, in fact, it's funny you mention that, because there was a time when we had this brilliant idea to make RGB cable where the cores were red, green, and blue. And it so affected the velocity of those cables that we really couldn't do it.
Once you get the plenum-rated stuff going, are you going to be talking to the housing market so you can get all of these smart houses wired up to handle all of this?
Well, of course. We'll take whatever we can get.
You were talking about the attenuation of the cable and how the chip is really the controlling factor.
Yes.
What is the basic noise floor of the cable?
Oh, there's a theoretical noise floor. I think it's minus 148 or something like that. It's way down, way farther down than we're currently going. I mean, you could look that up. That's a Google kind of question. Something like 148. Oh, the rest of it you believe? Wow, that's amazing. Okay, thank you very much.